Hi everyone, and welcome to the Sam and Parker podcast. This week, we are going to be talking about the overturning of Roe v. Wade. I hope you enjoy.
So, I don't know for sure what I'm even going to title this thing, because I don't even know how to describe it in a few words, but,
just well shit.
The basis of what we are going to be talking about is the overturning of Roe v. Wade and how it impacts future legislation. So, we should start off with, like, what is it? What's a description of what's going on? I know most people know what Roe v. Wade is, but it's always good to just, like, get a basis.
I didn't quite understand it until I read your notes, I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, I guess that helps then. So, as of June 24th, 2022, the U.S. Supreme Court voted to overturn Roe v. Wade. It was a landmark case from 1973 that protected abortion at the federal level. The case started with a woman named Norma McCorvey, who took on the pseudonym, I can't say that word.
Pseudonym.
Jane Roe, which I think is really clever because Jane Doe.
And I thought you misspelled it, and then I looked back up and I went, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's where the Roe came from. So she was in her third trimester of pregnancy and wanted an abortion in Texas. Texas was very strict about abortions and would not allow her to get one. The case made it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and it was determined that women were allowed to make the choice to get an abortion because it was their right to privacy. This put in a place that women could have an abortion at any time during the first trimester, and states were allowed to regulate and ban abortions after the first trimester. However, those regulations and bans did not matter if the woman's health was at stake. So the first trimester was completely open game. After the first trimester, states technically could fight it, but if the woman's health was at stake at all, then it was absolute. She could still get it up until the third trimester, like throughout the third trimester for most states. So it being overturned means that now it is now up to the states to decide their own rules on abortion. This prompts many Republican ruling states to attempt to outlaw abortion completely. And the basis of what it is it's a backslide in women's rights.
Yeah, rights in a lot of ways. I mean, we're literally just taking away people's rights to their own body. And it's not just women's, I mean, it's anybody with a uterus.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna talk about that. It is usually labeled as a women's issue, which that's part of the whole people not accepting trans people into the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's typically labeled as a women's issue, but in my opinion, it's even deeper than trans people because it creates problems for cis men too.
Yeah.
Because I mean, if you're in a good relationship and you just don't want a kid, like that impacts the guy too.
Yeah.
Not nearly as much as the one carrying the child, but it still has a really big impact. It, like we've talked about before, that some people shouldn't be having kids. They're not ready for it, or they just don't want to. You shouldn't be forced to if you don't want to.
Some people are not mature enough to have children.
Yeah.
That goes for adults and people under the age.
Yeah, but the main point of this episode is to be talking about how this could impact LGBTQ laws. Because as much as it's an absolute travesty for people that can have children, it adds another level to it in the fact that LGBT rights could be taken away because of this legislation.
It's almost as if they had the nerve and the goal to go this far. What's stopping them from going farther?
Yeah.
I mean, gay marriage in the United States got legalized in 2016. That really was not that long ago.
Not at all.
And they spent this long just trying to get rights for women. We spent this long trying to get rights for LGBT people. And now it's all getting taken away. So it's just a matter of it could happen, it may not happen. They're talking about what they want it to happen. I wouldn't be surprised. And it's just like, we as queer people have got to be ready to have that conversation, ready to have that fight, ready to, as much as I hate to say it, flee if you can.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that. I feel that this episode will give queer people a true idea of what is going on, because I tried to get research from both sides. I tried to get research from experts that are saying, yes, LGBT rights very well could be taken away, and then other people that are saying, no, I really don't think that's even a possibility for right now. To segue into and really connect abortion and LGBTQ laws, it really begs the question, do trans people take away from the conversation when it comes to reproductive rights? And that is a big conversation right now, especially among conservatives, not really as much around liberals, but among conservatives, they will try to say that, like, that trans men and trans women, like, make things more difficult for women, and it just, like, confuses the conversation, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, Republicans get really, really triggered by the terms, like, person that has a uterus, things like that, you know? God forbid.
Heaven forbid, you know?
Yeah, so this source I got from the Human Rights Campaign, and it says, 36% of transgender people who have ever been pregnant have considered attempting to end their pregnancy by themselves without clinical supervision. Almost 1 in 5 or 19% went through with this attempt. More than 1 in 10 attempted self-managed abortion due to difficult situations such as fear or ongoing intimate partner violence. So what that sums up is a massive amount of trans people that are able to get pregnant did and tried to do an at-home, basically botched abortion. Mm-hmm. And that has an extremely high fatality rate. That's not at all good. That's something that is awful. And then, well, that, like, 36% considered it, and 1 in 5 actually did, like, attempt to have an at-home abortion or a non-clinical abortion, even if it's someone that is not, like, licensed, someone that is, like, going out of someone's home. Like, that was amazing for people that it, in the way that it was safer than just, like, an at-home type thing. Mm-hmm. But you still, you don't know this person, you don't know their qualifications, that kind of thing.
And I mean, you don't have the sterility of a hospital, mm-hmm, or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I can definitely understand why you wouldn't want to go. I mean, any trans person hates going to the doctor 9 times out of 10. And we'll talk about that. I think we'd have a blog post planned for that about trans people facing difficulties in the medical field.
Yeah, it'll be one that's coming up.
Yeah. And especially like gynecological exams. It's really bad as a trans person. It's really difficult, especially when you have dysphoria and everything like that. So I can only imagine not only having this dysphoria and being pregnant and having to go to a gynecological exam and be put down for needing to get an abortion, because let's face it, I wouldn't want to go through that. And I know a lot of other people wouldn't want to either. And we shouldn't have to give up sex or anything pleasurable just because we're getting this right taken away from us.
Well, that, and the research says that of the one in ten that attempted managed abortions by themselves, it was due to things like partner violence. Mm. And so that just adds a whole nother level of complexity, because medical professionals also do not do well with partner violence.
Not at all.
So it's another, like, level. And the professional term for, like, the issues that trans people face in medical situations is called barriers to care. And that's not just for trans people, that's for, like, any minority group. If there is a stigma or, like, doctors discriminating or anything like that, it's called barriers to care. They're less likely to be able to get abortions due to poverty, discrimination, and transphobia by medical professionals, like we said. Because that's another thing that people don't talk about as much, is the poverty rate, mm-hmm, of LGBTQ people. I don't know the exact statistics, but
it's pretty high because of the amount of queer people that get kicked out of their home at a young age.
I know queer homelessness is really bad.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of us have a lot of medical bills and everything. I mean, if you are trans, and you're transitioning, it's not cheap. It's
if
really
you want surgery, if yeah. you want hormones,
if you want any of it. I mean, which you don't have to transition to be trans, but if you do, it's expensive, and so a lot of us are in poverty.
Yeah. So moving on to the back to the legislation side of things. So same-sex marriage legislation came into the conversation when the Roe v. Wade case was overturned. Judge Clarence Thomas said in his opinion about the abortion ruling that the Supreme Court should also take another look at Griswold versus Connecticut, Lawrence versus Texas, and do you know how to say that? Oberfell?
Oberfell?
Oberfell.
I think it's Oberfell.
It's the most important LGBT case, I don't know how to say it, versus Hodges. These are landmark cases that allowed for same-sex marriage to be legalized. He went on to say that those cases were wrong and should be corrected by the court. However, Judge Kavanaugh, which for those of you who don't know, he's Republican, said in his opinion that even though the abortion case was overturned, that does not mean the same for those landmark cases. And so it sounds as though is Judge, we never know how they're gonna vote, but it sounds like Judge Kavanaugh is not on board for voting to discriminate against LGBTQ people, which that's a good sign despite how much of a jerk he is. Because he was the Supreme Court nomination the Supreme Court person that Trump nominated.
Okay.
And so it was there was a bunch of controversy. There was a whole, I don't know if it was really a trial, there was a whole hearing about if he might have committed sexual assault and things like that. They were trying to figure out if he was even fit to be a judge, but...
Lovely.
But he's been a judge for a while now. The Griswold case said that married couples have the right to contraception. So that's all about... That one's all about birth control, that first landmark case that I mentioned. The Lawrence case said that states could not ban same-sex couples from having sex. So the Lawrence case... It's one that's been talked about a lot recently. It's basically I don't really know how to describe it super well, but it really does outlaw same-sex marriage or same-sex couples from having sex. Mm-hmm. Where if a neighbor reports you or anything for doing that, then you could be put in jail.
Is that the sodomy law?
That's the sodomy law. It bans sodomy, which I don't understand because that can happen between straight couples.
Yeah.
So it's never really made sense to me, but it's mainly just used to discriminate against same-sex couples. And Oberfell legalized same-sex marriage. That is the recent legislation as far as federal level. So according to an HRC Twitter post, it said, "This new vision of the Constitution will embolden state legislators to make trouble, but today there is no legal effects on the right to same-sex marriage or same-sex intimacy." So that's kind of the HRC's stance on it. And then they also went on to say, "Our fight right now is centered on ensuring people still have access to abortion and reproductive services that they need, but make no mistake, we will not back down from defending the progress that we have made and keeping the fight for full LGBTQ equality going." So the way I interpreted kind of the HRC's stance on this, which I mean, they're massive in the community. They do a lot of good. They don't seem to think that it's at an immediate issue that LGBT rights are gonna get taken away. They think that the main focus should be on abortion care, mm-hmm. which I don't doubt that people should be focusing on abortion care, but we're gonna look at both sides, but I'm not entirely sure how I feel about them kind of saying that it's not an immediate thing that's happening, mm-hmm. because I do feel that it is, but we'll keep looking.
I mean, it's kind of scary, and it's not that we want to take any attention away from the abortion topic, because I know that we both fully support choice.
Yeah.
And feminism, I really support women's rights and doing what you need to do. But I think personally I'm the wrong person to know a lot about government issues. I really don't quite understand it, but I try my best. But it seems to me that there's a very well chance that they might be using this as a distraction and to keep everybody fully focused on this. And then they have every chance to turn around
yeah.
and swipe out same-sex marriage underneath their feet.
Yeah. Many of the Supreme Court justices are saying that the abortion ruling will not go any further and impede on LGBTQ rights, as none of the judges have made any comments about that, except for Thomas. Like, Thomas is the only one that seems like is really talking about it. None of the other Supreme Court judges are saying anything about taking away LGBT rights. However, the big idea in Roe is that it is protected by the 14th Amendment, even if it doesn't directly say it in the Constitution. Judge Alito said that abortion was not a protected right when the 14th Amendment was written, therefore it's not protected. When the 14th Amendment was written, same-sex couples were banned, interracial couples were banned, and birth control was banned. This would mean that the same applies to them. And so what I'm explaining there is that the reason why they were able, or their a lot of their justifications for overturning Roe v. Wade was that it's not in the Constitution and that it was not a protected right when the 14th Amendment was written.
Can we agree that we just need to rewrite the Constitution?
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, I think it would still work if they didn't take it as concrete as they take it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Which I feel the same way about the Bible in a lot of circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
In that it is a very old piece of text that you need to be open-minded to figure out how it applies to modern day.
Yeah.
Because the main point of the Constitution, aside from to protect the people, was also to keep the government under control. And it does not seem that that is what is happening as of recently.
Doesn't seem like it.
It's all about checks and balances, and it doesn't seem like those checks and balances are working correctly. Rebecca Rolfe from the San Francisco LGBT Community Center said, "There is no attack on one set of civil rights that doesn't attack all civil rights. We certainly see that in the LGBTQ community that reproductive rights are LGBT rights, that voting rights are LGBT rights." So what she's saying there is it's all interconnected. If they're trying to take away one specific like group of civil rights, they're gonna go for the LGBT community and they're gonna go for voting rights, things like that.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's her opinion. That was a statement that's made. And so it really goes down, like it boils down to, if you believe that Congress people are going to go for that next. Because that's something that, even when the Roe v. Wade draft was leaked, I kind of really didn't think it was gonna happen. I was like, well, like, yeah, they're talking about it, but that doesn't mean that it's actually gonna happen. And I definitely don't wanna make that mistake with LGBTQ rights. I don't wanna be like, oh, well, it probably won't happen, and then it does.
Yeah.
So really, it's completely up to interpretation. Regardless, I would encourage you to still do your own research. There are a lot of websites that explain your rights and explain these things in terms that are not legal terms, and they are very well to understand.
I didn't know that.
Well, you just really have to search for it, but most articles are gonna be pretty willing to explain it in a non, like, completely legal way. Which is really nice, which is a lot of what I looked at, which I will put every single one of the sources I used for this in the description of the podcast. So if anyone wants to go look at that, because I took out basically summaries, but there's a lot more information there, so that would be a really good place to start and then to keep going. But yeah, it's really up to interpretation. When I first heard about Roe v. Wade being overturned, and obviously Judge Thomas's concurring opinion was also released that day that included that he wanted to go after LGBTQ rights, it sparked a very like deep conversation in us about our future, because we're not married and we don't know like what's going to come, you know. So we immediately started looking at what states are safe, what countries are safe, and of course I'm a planner and I'm very comprehensive about things, so I came up with a completely comprehensive emergency plan that basically accounts for if anything goes wrong, here's what to do. So if you want to know more about that and how to devise that, I'm going to be making a blog post about that that completely lays it out. So definitely check that out if you're more interested in that topic specifically. And then we're about to record episodes also talking about what states are best for LGBT people and what countries are best. So look for that too. Mm-hmm. But I do think that even if you do not think that LGBT rights are in immediate threat, I think it is good to have a plan right now.
I think it's always really been a good plan, at least for me personally.
I had never considered it before.
Oh, absolutely have since I was younger. Especially, because I just feel like human life's fragile, human rights are fragile, and the way they're getting tossed around like it's nothing right now. I mean, anything goes. I think anything's possible. Anything, it could go one way, it could go the other, it could go a different way. And you just have to be prepared for all ends. And yeah, they're very difficult conversations. I mean, there was many nights where we were both crying out of fear.
Yeah.
But it's something that we can highly, highly recommend doing. And we recognize that a lot of us are in poverty and everything else. And so you may not have the money to leave the States, or you may not have the money to leave, to move a different country, or to even find a different house. But at that point, you've got to understand how to protect yourself and how to protect your own rights.
Yeah, the good news is I honestly believe that if America were to take away all LGBT rights, my opinion is that Canada would open their border for refugees. And in that, they will provide relocation assistance. So I wouldn't worry too much in, like, if worse comes to worse and you do not have the money to leave, I think that there will be more resources for that in the future, honestly. Because there are resources right now for emergency funds in certain situations and in certain populations. Mm-hmm. Like, if there's a natural disaster, states and countries will provide relocation funds. And you don't have to do that all alone if you're in poverty.
Yeah.
Another thing that I wanted to cover about the conversations that we've been having about Roe v. Wade, I wanted to talk a little about some of those conversations that we had to kind of shed light on what you talk about. Obviously, we're a couple where you're trans, so it's not going to apply to everybody. But I believe that talking about our conversation will shed light on a lot of what queer people have to talk about in this day and age.
Definitely.
So I want to say it's just really scary to have to ask the question, like, how will we be able to make our marriage legal? Because marriage is not important to everybody. There are certain people that think, oh, it's just a piece of paper, I don't care about marriage. Mm-hmm. It's something that I feel is deeply important to both of us. It's very, very important to me. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to get married, like, before anything happens. Like, we have a plan to get married in 2 years from now, but it's scary because you don't know when, like, how things are gonna be. It was really devastating to me because I've had the place that I wanted to get married in picked out since I was 13. But it's in Tennessee, and as we are going to talk about, Tennessee is one of the worst places as far as, like, prejudice with LGBT people. And so I'm reevaluating that now and saying, like, I don't even know if it would be safe for us to get married there. Yeah. And we might need a backup plan. And then the other thing regarding specifically trans people that are transitioning and that are taking, like, certain actions to transition, a really interesting question came up with us, that I asked, was if Parker basically fully transitions in the eyes of the state, where there's a name change, all the documents are completely changed, and top surgery has happened, and we get married, does it count as a same-sex couple, or does it count as a straight couple? Like, that was really, really interesting to me, and no matter how much research I did, there was no definite thing. Because some states said no, like, the state can trace it back and be like, oh, you're with a trans person, you know, that's a same-sex thing. And then other sources said that they can't do that. And then I also wondered if all of a sudden we hear that they're about to ban same-sex marriage in the future, and we immediately go to the courthouse and get married, my question was, is that still going to be held together legally after same-sex marriage is no longer legal, like, if that happens. So that was all really interesting questions that, like I said, no, like, I'm very good about research. Like, I'm finishing my bachelor's degree in college. I've done research all through it. I couldn't find a definite answer to any of those things. It's all up in the air.
Yeah.
So that's just what I want to talk about, is that I think it's very important of, like, the types of conversations we're having to have right now.
And I think it's something that's important for the entire community. I mean, it's not that it's necessarily new, because I know people were having this conversation in the 80s and the 90s and even in the early 2000s, but it feels more real right now.
Yeah, it's pretty new to us. Like, we were 15 whenever same-sex marriage was legalized, yeah. So, like, it feels very new for it to be threatened in this way.
Yeah. And I think because Generation Z is the one that's doing so much change right now, I think we're taking things more to heart than previous generations have in some ways, because so much has happened to us.
Yeah.
We have been through so many things.
With same-sex marriage getting legalized, were you, as like a preteen and young teenager, like, did you think about that in the relationships you were in? Like, about not being able to get married? Because, like I said, it was, like, we were, like, 15 whenever it was.
Yeah.
Whenever it was, like, do you remember thinking about that at all? Or was it just not a thought in your mind as a young teenager?
I don't really think it was. I don't remember having... I mean, I think I just always had this, like, knowledge that I was, like, I'm gonna move. I'm not gonna stay in the United States. I hate it here. And, like, you know, I always had that knowledge that it was gonna be way easier than it actually is. As you know, we all have a... like, rose-tinted sight as children.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was really much of a thought for me because of that.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, yeah. But I also have never really been one to, like, really think about the government, which is really bad.
That makes sense.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Don't forget to follow us wherever podcasts are available to stay up to date on new episodes. Thanks for watching.